Michelle Grattan, and this is the Conversations Politics podcast in Budget Week. Today we're talking with Finance Minister Matthias Cormann about budget measures and the reactions to them, and also to the Australian Bankers Association's Anna Bligh about the controversial new tax on the big banks. Matthias Cormann, this has been widely described by commentators as a Labor-light budget. How can you credibly dispute that?
Look, I will leave the commentary to the commentators. We've made all of the decisions about what in our judgment is in the national interest, what is the best way forward just today to put Australia on the strongest possible economic and fiscal foundation and trajectory for the future.
Now, your new tax on banks has sparked a furious reaction from them. You're being very prescriptive that the banks should not pass this on to customers, but when a business has to pay more tax, surely it's up to that business to find the ways that it does pay it. If, for example, you were putting a tax on the big supermarkets, you wouldn't say, don't put up the price of butter or jam.
Well, we don't believe there's any reason for them to put up prices because banks in Australia are very, very profitable. I mean, those five major banks between them generate more than $30 billion in after-tax profits. And this is a $1.5 billion levy a year, which we believe is a fair and proportionate contribution for the major banks to make to Australia's national budget repair effort. And I mean, and the way we've designed the measure, it specifically and explicitly excludes day-to-day bank accounts, it excludes mortgage accounts, it excludes any account that is subject of the financial claims scheme. So there really is no reason for the banks to pass on these costs. And of course, because there's going to be increased competition from the smaller banks and the non-bank financial institutions who are competing with the banks, that'll keep the banks honest in terms of their pricing arrangements. And we've also given some additional resources to the ICCC and asked them to do work to keep an eye on what the banks might be, the major banks might be doing in this space.
If the tax doesn't go into customer charges, it's got to, in fact, be paid for by shareholders. Now, one of the bank executives has claimed that this is a stealth tax on retirees because super funds invest in bank shares. What's your answer to this?
Well, the banks are not happy to pay increased tax. I mean, that is not entirely surprising. But the truth is, given the Senate hasn't been prepared to pass all of the spending reduction measures that we've put forward, given the Senate was not going to pass about $14.7 billion worth of budget repair measures on the spending side of the budget, the only other way to get the budget back into surplus on the appropriate timetable was through revenue measures. And, you know, any revenue measure has to be paid by somebody. As far as this measure is concerned, it is consistent with what other countries around the world have done. It will help to level the playing field between the major banks and the smaller banks, and as such improve competition. And we believe, in the context of a very profitable banking sector, we believe it's a fair and proportionate contribution for them to make to budget repair. And I mean, and indeed, the Labor Party has already come out to say that they will support it, so it will become law.
The budget commits big dollars to equity investment in infrastructure projects, Sydney's second airport, the Melbourne to Brisbane new freight line. Doesn't this go against Liberal philosophy to stand back and let the private sector do the investment?
Well, firstly, when it comes to Western Sydney Airport, I mean, the reason we are developing the airport is because clearly a commercial investor who has to look at a more immediate commercial return doesn't necessarily have the same capacity as the government to take a long-term view. I mean, our intention is once the Western Sydney Airport is developed to put it on the market for sale, and we believe that whichever government is going to be in a position to sell it, I think we'll get a very good return for it. When it comes to inland rail, we will be developing this in partnership with the private sector. Yes, we will be making an $8.4 billion equity contribution through the Australian Rail Truck Corporation, but the project will be developed in partnership with the private sector, because the full cost of the project, of course, is higher than this, and we will be seeking to share risk and engage the private sector, in particular in relation to the development of some of the more complex segments of the project.
It does strike me that the Nationals have got a pretty good deal in this budget, especially on that freight line, because this project's been around since Adam was a boy, and if it was so good, one would have thought that it would have been developed already, and the cost-benefit study shows that the benefit over cost is pretty marginal.
Well, we believe that the country has got a good deal. We believe that there is a good case for the Inland Rail project as an alternative to road freight to be developed between Melbourne and Brisbane. I mean, there's some, obviously, parts of the route are more commercial than others, but in totality, and Infrastructure Australia has assessed the cost-benefit of this project, and it has assessed a positive cost-benefit, and we believe it's a good project. We believe it's an important project. Yes, a lot of work has been done on this, which is why we are very confident that we can deliver it. We've gone through a market testing exercise, which is a matter of public record, over the last few months. We've taken advice on how best to structure the project financing arrangements, and we believe that we've got a very good way forward.
For a long time, the government was very insistent that the budget problem was a spending one, not a revenue one. Given the new taxes, do you now acknowledge that there was a revenue problem?
The problem was clearly a spending problem, and we worked very hard to address the unsustainable and unfunded spending growth that we've inherited. We did make significant progress, but we weren't able to get all of the measures that we put forward on the spending reduction side of the equation through the Senate, and we've made some judgments that, to the extent that we couldn't, that the only other way, regrettably, that we were able to make up ground was on the revenue side of the budget. But if you look at what's happened on the spending side, when we came into government, spending as a share of the economy was heading for 26.5% within the decade and rising. We've arrested the increase over the current forward estimates. We get spending back down to about 25% as a share of the economy, which is just slightly above the long-term average of 24.8%. So we've made progress. We're heading in the right direction. Spending growth is under better control now than what it was. And it would have been our preference to keep making progress on the spending side of the budget, reducing expenditure, but we were not able to get all of our own way, and so we had to make the decisions that are reflected in the budget last night.
There are always questions about the assumptions in budgets, but this time a number of economists have been somewhat sceptical about your healthy growth in wages that you think will come, because wages are flatlined. Are you confident that that assumption will hold?
Yes, we are confident. And I mean, obviously, we take advice on these things. I mean, we don't just plug these things out of thin air. We take advice from the experts in Treasury. Forecasts are based on credible, responsible, prudent assumptions. Clearly Treasury, and it's all laid out in the budget papers as to how Treasury comes to its view. I mean, we take responsibility, of course, the Treasurer and I, having our name on the front page of the budget papers, we take responsibility. But if you look at the global economic outlook, it has improved. If you look at the domestic economic outlook in Australia, with continuous low interest rates, with continuous lower exchange rates, with a flexible labour market, with a pro-growth agenda pursued by the government across a whole range of public policy areas, we believe that growth will strengthen, in the three out years to 3%, and obviously, there are some consequences on the wages side as well that flow from that.
You've become the government's crossbench whisperer in the Senate. You'll this time have an easy task with the bank levy, because Labor signalled its agreement, but there is likely to be a call for amendments to the Medicare levy hike to protect lower income earners. Do you think that the government will be flexible enough to get that through, even if you have to make some changes?
Well, firstly, low-income earners are already protected. Very low-income earners don't pay the Medicare levy because they're exempted. And the lower your income, the lower the tax that you will pay. The higher your income, the higher the tax you will pay. I mean, that is a function of applying a percentage. 0.5% of a higher wage is a higher dollar number than 0.5% of a lower wage. So, I mean, let's not get ahead of ourselves. We put our budget forward last night. We haven't even heard the official response of the opposition yet in the budget reply speech. Our focus, of course, is on achieving outcomes, but we believe that we've struck the right balance and that we've come forward with a budget that fully funds the NDIS in a way that is responsible and fair.
Just finally, is this the budget you had to have rather than the budget you would have desirably wanted to have?
Well, you know, every budget deals with the circumstances, the challenges and the opportunities that you face at the time, and you make the judgments on, you know, what you believe is in the best interest of Australia. You make judgments on what you believe is the right way forward to put us on the strongest, best possible foundation and trajectory for the future.
Matthias Cormann, thank you for talking with us.
Always good to talk to you.
The new levy on banks is one of the most controversial, probably the most controversial item in the budget delivered this week, and the banks are pushing back hard. We're talking now with Anna Bly, CEO of the Australian Bankers Association. Anna Bly, how toughly are the banks going to fight this issue?
Well, one of the problems with the announcement by the government last night of this new tax on banks is that they've done it without any consultation, and the banks are still working to get enough detail to understand just how, which parts of their business will be levied and what it means to them in real terms. The government's indicated that their numbers tell them that there is a very significant expectation of them delivering at least $6.2 billion. When the banks have had the opportunity, which they'll get tomorrow, to meet with Treasury officials and get some of that data more refined, they will be in a position to give further consideration to how they might continue to take this up to the government and what opportunities there might be to either get the government to reconsider or at least ameliorate some unintended consequences if there proved to be some.
Could it turn into a mining tax type campaign?
Well, Michelle, I'd have to say that banks are very angry about this. They see this as nothing more than a cash grab by a government that's trying to fill a budget hole. And they see that the government have imposed this on, they've singled banks out, and they've done that for a very straightforward political reason. That is, they see banks right now as vulnerable and easy targets in political terms. If people kind of think back, I think it would have been regarded as an extraordinary thing for either side of politics to single banks out in this way, as recently as maybe a decade ago. But post the global financial crisis, the world's in a different place. Banks are very deeply conscious of the fact that they've got a lot of work to do to win back the trust of some of their customers and of the community and meet public expectations around conduct and around culture. But putting a tax on them does nothing for customer service. It does nothing to change culture in banks. It adds a financial impost on them while they are in the middle of implementing probably the largest reform program that they've seen in their history, at the same time as still cooperating with and providing vast amounts of information and support to some very significant inquiries, including the new Productivity Commission inquiry.
While it would seem a very long bow, some have suggested that the fact that the Australian Bankers Association appointed you, a former Labor Premier, is a factor in all this, because we know that Scott Morrison was furious at that appointment. Do you think that that's the case, or do you think that he wouldn't be so personal?
Look, one of the things that's worried me about where Australian banking sits in the public's mind and the political agenda is that I've moved to a place where it has become permissible to say almost anything about a bank and to do almost anything to a bank. And that's not that far from a pretty reckless place when you think about the very serious obligations that legislators, both government and opposition and crossbenchers, have. So I do think it's time to start calling some warning bells about the imperative not to be cavalier, that just because banks might be unpopular, it's a dangerous place when politicians believe they can get cavalier with that. And I think that some of the what we've seen out of the government in the last 2 days is bordering on that. But do I think that this government is making policy on the basis of whether or not they like me? No, I do not. I think it's this is a deeply serious issue, and I think any sort of suggestion that those sorts of things are playing a role would be to misjudge what's going on here. What's going on here is a government that has improved their budget bottom line by $6.3 billion over the forward estimates, and $6.2 billion of that is coming from this levy on banks. So they've picked five companies in the country to plug a hole. And, you know, the idea that they might do that around the personality of one person is, I think, a bit fanciful.
What did you think of Scott Morrison's comment to some in the lock-up Crimea River?
Well, I suppose that's what I mean by cavalier language. I think our banking system, we live in a very robust democracy, and people, you know, some people have suggested to me that bank bashing is a national sport, and that, you know, may well be true, but I think most Australians care very deeply about having a financial system and a banking system that is strong, that is well regulated, which attracts investment. If you start to look at what's happening to Australian banks through the eyes of people in other countries, what you see is a banking system that they have always believed is one of the strongest in the world, and yet they've got you know, one side of politics calling for extraordinary powers of a royal commission to investigate them, and the other side taxing them out of the blue and singling them out and talking about them in that kind of language. So, you know, I don't want to overplay this, but I do. There's some inherent risks here, and there's an obligation on people in public life to exercise their power very carefully.
Well, you put the two sides. If you had a choice between a tax or a royal commission, which would you take?
Well, that's not up to. I think it's a false dichotomy. At the moment, there are some 17 inquiries, reviews or investigations into one aspect or another of banking. And so people have said to me, oh, well, wouldn't it be better to have one commission of inquiry? The reality is that's not a choice. We're not choosing between, we're not in a position to choose between 17 inquiries or one inquiry. The 17 are actually either just finished or still on foot, so we're having them. The question is whether you then have another one that is another potentially 2 to 3 years of this investigation and scrutiny coming at a very high cost, and I think importantly looking at all of the things that the 17 are currently looking at, or whether you want to give banks the opportunity to actually get on and start implementing the recommendations and making the changes that will make a difference to customers. And I see the tax as, you know, a completely separate thing to the scrutiny that banks are under. You know, all of that scrutiny, or, you know, 99% of it, goes to the heart of the customer experience, to, you know, culture and conduct in banks. Putting a tax on the bottom line of banks is, as I said, it's not a customer. That's not going to help customers, and it is going to hit the bottom line.
I heard you say last night, immediately after the budget was delivered, that this could go to the stability of the system. Do you think that's a real risk, or is it just a outside possibility?
Well, I think it's important to look at the market. Yesterday, by the end of trading, there was $14 billion stripped off the value of Australian bank shares, and they are bank shares are the most widely held shares by Australians. There have been further market falls today. I haven't seen the end of market today, but there were certainly further drops for major banks today. So that tells you what markets are thinking. I certainly know that banks are being questioned when they are on investor roadshows from international investors about where is all this going. Now, you know, I don't want to exaggerate this, but I don't think you should underestimate that when governments start playing around with banking sector and the banking and the regulatory system, which is part of this package, as well as adding taxes to the bottom line, investors have got an obligation to start asking questions.
So there is a danger.
I think there is a danger. And I'm not saying it's been realised yet, but you know, when the market drops $14 billion of value, that's telling you something, and it doesn't look, you know, that's not stability.
Now, just finally, the government is saying very strongly that the banks should not pass this tax on to customers, and they're suggesting that if they do, then the customers should go to another smaller bank. And they're also suggesting that the ACCC will be keeping a very watchful eye on this. Is this a distinction between customers and shareholders in who should absorb this tax increase a real one, or is that a false dichotomy? Is it up to the banks essentially to decide how they distribute the pain they will feel?
Well, I've heard the Treasurer say that banks should, in his words, banks should absorb this tax. And I frankly have no idea what he means by that. Taxes can't be absorbed, they have to be paid. And the money has to come from somewhere. There are only three places that banks can take this from. They take it from savers. That is, the interest that they pay on the deposits that we all put into our banks. They take it from borrowers. That is, the cost that it costs you to borrow a home loan or a personal loan, etc. Or they take it from the bottom line of profits, and that means that it's it impacts on shareholder dividends, or a combination of those three. So the suggestion that this can be somehow absorbed somewhere without anybody feeling it is a complete and utter nonsense. Obviously it suits the Treasurer to say this, but ultimately banks will have to make a decision about where that money comes from. Now, in terms of who are the shareholders of Australian banks, the biggest shareholders in Australian banks are Australian superannuation funds. And every Australian who has a superannuation account should be, concerned when value gets wiped off banks, because they are very big. They're very big stakeholders. You know, anyone who's got a superannuation account is a shareholder in a major bank in Australia, without any doubt. But beyond those institutional investors, there is a very sizable. Banks are a very widely held stock. So the Commonwealth Bank, for example, has 800,000 individual direct shareholders. Most of the other banks have between 500,000 and 700,000 individuals. Now, some of those will be people who own more than one bank share, but hundreds of thousands of them will also be customers of at least one of the banks that they hold shares in. So, to separate customers from shareholders is a very fine line.
Anna Bly, thank you for talking with us today. This issue obviously has a long way to run.
And certainly does.
And that's all from our Conversation Budget podcast for today.